Many years ago, I was living at a Zen Buddhist monastery in Oregon, and I was scheduled to do a service, I forget, somewhere in Oregon, and I had no idea what to talk about. And my old Zen teacher said, well, that's simple, just have them do 35 minutes of silence. I said, I'm not sure how well that would work. Maybe someday I'll try it, but not here. Mary Lynn, thank you for being back. As always, it's lovely to see you. And Bill, thank you for doing the sound. And Rick, for doing all the amazing work you do as far as live streaming. And again, thank you all for being here at the end of a very interesting week of weather, I must say. Now, you've probably heard the term, God is love. And for me, that's the simplest definition of God that I know of, because it doesn't really require a deity to be involved. It's also a very simple definition of universalism. And typically, many people that I know say, well, I'm a Unitarian. And we kind of forget that other U in UU, universalist. So I want to talk about that a little bit, but more significantly, the work that's going on within the Unitarian Universalist Association to refocus on what universalism might become. So here is a definition of universalism from the 19th century, when it was an evangelical, Christian, and liberal religious community. This particular statement is from Aaron Grosch, who was the editor of the Universalist Register in 1842. Quote, all universalists believed in the existence of God, acknowledged Jesus as his son, and of the scriptures as divine revelation, recognized limited rewards and punishments under the moral government of God and Jesus, and the final salvation of all intelligences from sin and suffering to a state of holiness and happiness. And it was that last statement that made them so different than all of the other religious communities in that time. In fact, universalists were hated in many communities and driven out. At that time, universalism was the fifth largest denomination in the United States. Its robust challenge to a Calvinist theology of a pre-select going to heaven and everyone else, probably all of us, going to hell, resonated with farmers, merchants, and working classes alike. Its theology, if cut down to the finest definition, was very simple. Neither the Hebrew Testament nor the teachings of Jesus spoke of hell for unbelievers, and so the premise of a loving God condemning most to hell and damnation was simply wrong. Much of that universalism 180 years ago wouldn't translate too well for us today. Contemporary Unitarian Universalists may or may not believe in some form of God, might not believe in Jesus as God's son, and certainly probably not the Bible as divine revelation. Is universalism, though, still important in this contemporary Unitarian Universalist world? And until recently, I would have said that probably not, because most people just ignored it and said Unitarian, because it was frankly a shorter way of a very cumbersome name. But the question still exists, is universalism still in any way important and significant? And that's going to be something that you folks and many thousands of others are going to be deciding in future years. And this is a question that I propose for you because it comes with caveats, which I'll mention in a moment, as well as a short story of the last decade, or let's even say generation, in the Unitarian Universalist world. The story is complex and messy. I can only give a small summary of it, and it's really going to involve the racism that did and does still exist in the UUA, and the tendency to focus on a very cryptic phrase called white supremacy. I shared some of that story two Sundays ago. The UUA, or Unitarian Universalist Association, and the Professional Ministers Association had a more or less friendly takeover by a group of clergy and lay people who do call themselves Universalists. They are focused on a very idealistic acronym, and most of you know I hate acronyms, but I'll use this one. ARAOMC, or Anti-Racism, Anti-Oppression, Multicultural Community. They have now, in the last 5 years, gone much further thanks to the advocacy of Black Lives UU and other groups of especially formerly marginalized communities. Terms like white supremacy culture and a book by activist Robin DiAngelo called White Fragility have become essential parts of that conversation around this country. The UUA is being purged of old styles of white supremacy thinking, and I think that's probably a good thing given what I know of the history of the association. But it has been really messy and punishing. Recently, the UUA Board of Trustees began an institutional UUA-wide review, and this is bureaucratic, I know, of Article 2 of the UUA bylaws. This is the article that includes the 7 principles and 6 sources. And for any of you who are wondering what on earth am I talking about, in the front of your gray hymnal, a few pages in after the contents and preface, and after the title, Singing the Living Tradition, there is a list of the principles and sources. One of the sources on Earth-Centered Spirituality was added after a number of these books were published. They created a commission to review Article 2, which is the bylaws of the UUA, and contains the principles and purposes. They were recommended to consider any and all changes to what really comes down to a definition or foundational understanding of what Unitarian Universalism is. That commission recently submitted its report to the UUA Board of Trustees. The commission has asked for guidance from many focus groups in the UUA, and I think some people here took part in that. I believe that they have taken some of that guidance to remove some of the more enthusiastic language that was contained in their earlier draft. But changes will occur. One recommendation is that the 6 sources and 7 principles that you may have seen be removed in favor of a new way to visualize the essence of Unitarian Universalism. I've asked some of my friends in the UUA why the sources and principles are being put aside. I was told that lists are too European and too white. Okay? The illustration on the front of your order of service is a simple picture of their recommendation. I am a very visual person, and I actually now think that that illustration is very elegant and descriptive, and that's where I'm going to go into a little detail in a bit. Now for the caveats. I continue to be a minister within this organization called the UUA, but I disagree with some of the premises that they're working with, and I'll say more about that in a moment. I resigned mostly over the last 3 years because I realized that the work of this organization is not the work that I can focus on any longer. A colleague of mine is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Spokane, Washington. Reverend Dr. Todd Eckhoff has been a longtime social justice advocate, but he was deeply concerned about the direction of what we have called an association, but in some ways is becoming a denomination, and there's an important difference between those two. The annual General Assembly of congregations, which usually means several thousand people getting together once a year in a convention, and for at least 5 days, nobody has to answer the question, what is a Unitarian Universalist? Although that's changing. They met in Spokane in June of 2019. I wasn't there because I was moving here to Meadville after a very intense 3-year interim position at the West Seattle UU Church. Todd brought with him a series of essays, which you can actually download from Amazon, called Gadfly Papers, Three Inconvenient Essays by One Pesky Minister, unquote. He brought them to the General Assembly and he handed them out for free. Imagine, free books. Now, a decade ago, nobody would have paid any attention. They would have read the book and, okay, that's nice, but no one else would have made a fuss about it. Wrong. The essay spoke about what he believed were disturbing fundamentalist trends in the UUA and the Ministers Association, away from principles of freedom, reason, and tolerance, which have really been foundational pieces of the Unitarian Universalist community, certainly since 1961, when the two religious communities merged. He believed that a very mutated form of universalism based upon a tough love model was creating a religious community based on forced equality with no room for dissenting views. His presence and his book were condemned at that General Assembly, and he was told to leave the convention center with his books. He was also told to apologize to all those in attendance because he had hurt feelings and, quote, advocated white supremacy. UU clergy at that General Assembly wrote a joint condemnation letter to him after he refused to apologize for his writings. Todd was later defellowshipped, which is a form of excommunication, from the ministry, although he remains a settled minister at the Spokane Church. And I should also, in transparency, mention that I've known Todd for many years. I continue to be in touch with him and do pastoral support as I am able. A fair number of Todd's colleagues resigned from the UUMA Professional Association to protest his treatment. Other ministers who complained about the lack of meaningful dialogue around the direction of the UUA were also defellowshipped or forced into retirement. I agreed with the ideal, the goal of beloved community, but not the harsh and punishing approach. I resigned from the Professional Ministers Association 2 years ago. And in that letter, and I shared it with the Board of Trustees here some time ago, I expressed my loathing for the shaming and tossing aside of dedicated clergy and lay people as one reason. The second one was my concern that congregational polity would be tossed out. Now, here's the history lesson. Congregational polity, and that really started with the Congregationalist Church, which now is the United Church of Christ, back in the 17th and 18th centuries, primarily New England. And the belief was that every church is independent. They have the ability to hire their own ministers, have their own governance, and they are not beholden to a larger headquarters entity. And that has been and still is the focus in a Unitarian Universalist world. So this church, you have your own budget, you hire your own ministers, you have your own governance, and really you are independent and more or less free to do what you want. So those were my caveats: shaming and potentially the loss of our independence as congregations. Now, I'm going to share the basis of the Article 2 recommendations. And they're on the front, the image is on the front of your order of service. Those recommendations will be taken up at the Pittsburgh General Assembly this June. They'll be voted on for a majority yes vote, and then there will be a second vote in 2025 that must pass by a two-thirds majority. I noted two Sundays ago that this huge and important change is yours to decide as a new generation of Unitarian Universalists. After I mention the outline of the recommendations, I'm going to conclude with a few questions that I'd like you to consider as an independent congregation, because sooner or later, this will affect you. So let's quickly look at the basis of that image on the front of your order of service, and a couple of the statements I've had to cut down, because this is actually a longer reflection that I'm giving than per usual. But you can always find it on the link that I sent out 2 weeks ago in the B&B. All you do is click on it, and it is the report of the commission, and it's about 26 minutes in length. The chalice is in the center with the word love overlaid by the flame. And the focus on all of this is love with a capital L. And remember, as I said earlier, God is love. Love is the core of universal salvation, if you want to use that term, or love is universal. The words surrounding the chalice are spaced like flower petals around a chalice in love. Now, most of us grew up with words being most important. But now, ever since the beginning of the internet, I think, pictures have become so more powerful and important because they give a tremendous summary and essence of what we're trying to say. So this is why pictures, and especially this image, is becoming important. So, first word, interdependence. I'm quoting here. We honor the interdependent web of all existence. We covenant, and those words are in every single description, we covenant to cherish earth and all beings by creating and nurturing relationships of care and respect. And it goes on from there. The phrases are very much similar to our current seventh principle. Second word, pluralism. We celebrate that we are all sacred beings diverse in culture, experience, and theology. We covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The words continue after that and suggest similarity to the fourth principle. Third word, justice. We work to be diverse, multicultural, beloved communities where all thrive. We covenant to dismantle racism and all forms of systemic oppression. We support the use of inclusive and democratic processes to make decisions. Fourth word, transformation. We adapt to the changing world. We covenant to collectively transform and grow spiritually and ethically. Openness to change is fundamental to our Unitarian and Universalist heritage, never complete and never perfect. Fifth word, generosity. We cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope. We covenant to freely and compassionately share our faith, presence, and resources. Our generosity connects us to one another in relationships of interdependence and mutuality. Sixth and final word, equity. We declare that every person has the right to flourish with inherent dignity and worthiness. We covenant to use our time, wisdom, attention, and money to build and sustain fully accessible and inclusive communities. And on the face of it, those sound pretty fantastic, actually. But I'm not taking a position in this because I'm getting out of it all. And it is your decision, your decisions to make, and your discourse to have. But I will leave you with a few questions as this continues to be part of the larger conversation. What types of love, with a capital L, are they referring to? Unconditional or conditional love? A universalist form of universal love with no one left out? 2. Earlier drafts of the report speak a great deal about mutual accountability. And the thesis of this, as I was told some time ago, that churches are mutually accountable to one another. So as an example, the Erie Church might be accountable to us if we saw something bad happen, and vice versa. Individuals are accountable to each other and to call out the breaking of covenant. My questions are, who determines the validity of accountability? Are some more accountable than others? 3. How is justice a means to dismantling wrongs? Whose definition of justice is the right one? Who has the final word about what is just and what is not? 4. Dr. King's words in the opening words speak to love and power. Do these proposed changes help balance love and power or not? 5. Is there a broad theological grounding similar to the 6 sources in this new set of recommendations? And then 6th, which would be an interesting one to discuss, is there a role for redemption in this new way of living Unitarian Universalism? And those are just some of the questions that I know have come up in other places, other churches, but I think it's also something important for you to address, because in 5 or 10 years, you're going to be part of an entirely new religious community, still called the Unitarian Universalist Association. What it will be shaped like, how it will affect you, if at all, I do not know. But it is important you be part of the conversation. So with that, I thank you, and that is just a little hint of what possibly Unitarian Universalism and a new form of universalism may affect us all in the future. And now,